Welcome to the podcast, Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path, and I'm your host, Mike Allen. Have you ever lifted weights? In my much earlier years, I used to go to the gym and lift weights as part of my overall exercise regimen, and if I could regularly bench press more than 200 pounds, I was frankly pretty satisfied with myself. Well, the man we're going to be talking about today reportedly lifted more than 10 times that amount of weight, more than a ton, more than 2,000 pounds. Our guest today is Karen Britt, Vice President of the Voluntown, Connecticut Historical Society and a third grade teacher in that town. She studied the history and legendary claims of perhaps that town's most famous resident, Farmer Elmer Bitgood, who was said at the time to be the strongest man in the world. Karen will be along in just a moment with that fascinating story. This week's trivia question: the odd and scary noises coming from the earth in eastern Connecticut were said to have been caused by this mythical object. What is that object? We'll stick around after the main program for the answer, because then you'll know the topic for next week's show. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is brought to you by our sponsor, Yale New Haven Health. When people need the best quality health care, there's a reason they turn to Yale New Haven Health. In 1826, Yale New Haven Hospital became Connecticut's very first hospital. They were the first hospital in the U.S. to use chemotherapy. Yale New Haven was the first to introduce insulin pumps for diabetic patients, and they introduced the world's first intensive care unit for newborns. For more information about Yale New Haven Health, visit YNHHS.org. That's YNHHS.org. He was called the strongest man in the world in his day, and while there's no question he was unbelievably strong, there is some lingering doubt as to whether some of the more infamous stories surrounding Elmer Bitgood are entirely true, or maybe stretched just a bit, or maybe a lot. In the late 1800s, newspaper articles appeared nationwide describing his tremendous strength. Elmer lived on the family farm in the rural eastern Connecticut town of Voluntown. Today, the census counts just 2,500 residents in Voluntown. Well, Karen Britt is one of them, and she has a couple of important roles. She's vice president of the Voluntown Historical Society, and perhaps even more importantly, she's a teacher. She teaches third grade. Now, she has a great lesson plan that we're going to talk about, one that she uses with her students to try and help them understand the true confines between truth and maybe some stretched legendary stories, and these in particular about Elmer Bitgood. In any case, Elmer Bitgood was strong, fantastically strong, and there is little argument about his appetite or his general ability to lift weight that was far beyond what his peers could even think about doing. Karen, before we get into some of the purported achievements of Elmer Bitgood, something you know a lot about in his whole weightlifting career and what strength he had, I'd like to start off sort of setting the stage with some details about the man himself so people can paint a mental image of what this guy looked like and how, you know, big he was and that sort of thing. So if I could ask you to just sort of run down the statistics, his height, his weight. I know that somebody measured his chest at one point in time and his waist, his biceps. Can you just run down those statistics so that people have an idea what Elmer Bitgood kind of looked like?
Sure thing. He was a big man, and in his early 20s, he was about 290 pounds. I've read different reports on his height, but the average seems to be 5'9" tall, and his chest was reportedly 52 inches wide, and the biceps on his arms were 20 inches. And in the pictures, you can see he was quite a large man for his time. It's pretty impressive.
Now, you think about the average strapping farmer who's, you know, just works the farm every day and how strong these people are. He goes a couple of levels above this, but maybe let's talk about the Bitgood family, because I guess they were pretty hardy folk. If you could sort of tell us about them. I guess he had a few brothers, and what do we know about them?
He did, and there's actually quite a bit of extended family too, which were in the area. There were four boys. Jesse was the oldest, Robert, Elmer, and Doan. Elmer and Doan were the strong men, and they lived with their mom and father on the family farm. They had two sisters. The house that they lived in still stands today. They were just your typical clean living, hardy farming family that was just looking to, make a living and live a happy life.
Now, at some point along the way, I can imagine that the parents realized that Elmer and Doan were pretty strong, strapping kids. Now, there are some clearly, I think, exaggerated stories about the kind of amounts of food they would eat. But let's kind of talk about what some of those legends are. I guess Elmer, either way, did have kind of a healthy appetite.
He did. Although, and I discuss this with my students, I find it hard to believe that they would eat 45 pounds of cooked hamburger at a time. That's one of the yarns. I'm sure there was a significant amount of food for a family of that size to begin with, but then for those two strapping boys, it would have been additional. She used to cook her, supposedly cook the food for the family in a wash tub because they needed such a large quantity of it. There's also tales of them not being welcome at church suppers because they would eat everything and there would be nothing left for anybody else. There was a church supper where they charged 15 cents, imagine that, for the meal. And the boys bought four meals and reportedly cleared the platters and the 6-quart bean pot as well.
I just love the thought of that. Now, he was born in 1869, so this is a few years after the Civil War ended. He lived to be 69 and died in 1938. And along the way, and this is probably late teens, early 20s, but correct me if I'm wrong on that, he actually fashions his own first set of barbells. Now, I read somewhere, and I may have this wrong, but my understanding is that when he was alive, the barbell company that actually invented barbells that we all take for granted today hadn't been invented. And so he had to fashion his own. Could you describe what those kind of looked like and what they were?
Sure. Some of them were just plain stones. Well, stones is kind of a relative term because they were actually boulders that he would have on the board for back pressing, but the barbells themselves were carved granite and they essentially look like large round boulders with steel rods driven into them. And they're various sizes. There's one that he throws. It's just a large round boulder. It has a chain in the top with a handle that he would swing one-handed and toss a great distance.
And how much did that boulder weigh?
900 pounds, about.
Just incredible. Let's kind of paint the picture of this back press situation that he had. So this was a very thick plank of wood or several planks of wood that sat between two pillars with stones and rocks and boulders on those pieces of wood. And then he would get underneath it and with his back sort of stand up and raise this incredible weight. How much weight were on those pieces of wood?
Anywhere between 2,000 and maybe up to 2,400 pounds. I think it's unrealistic that he would have lifted any more than that. Looking at the photograph that has the 2,000 pounds written on it, I would say that that was pretty accurate.
This gets into the next chapter of this, which is that word of such feats spreads quickly, and indeed it did. Now, for those who are not familiar with Voluntown, it's in the very far east side of Connecticut, bordering Rhode Island, as a matter of fact. And a lot of the press coverage was really not so much Connecticut, although there was clearly was some, but it was Providence and Boston that came down, and actually reporters came down to document this huge man and all the feats that he was accomplishing. Is that correct?
That is correct. In fact, he was even challenged by many of the great physical creatures of the time or persons of the time that, there were weightlifters from Canada and other parts of the United States that supposedly contacted him to challenge him to see who was the strongest man.
That's just phenomenal. And word, in fact, did go nationwide, correct? I mean, newspapers were writing about him across the country.
Yes. He was a very humble man. He had been offered many times to weightlift for his own personal gain to make, you know, a substantial amount of money, and he turned it down.
Now, you have, and I got to take my hat off to you, because as an elementary teacher, the way you set this up, you shared this with me, these essentially PowerPoint slides in a different format that show some of the exploits he was alleged to have done, and then you leave it to the students to sort of debate or challenge their own, you know, imagination to say, do you think this is possible? And it's just a great lesson plan that you have. And I found myself drawn right in as I'm reading this going, gee, could he really have done this? And one of them that kind of stuck out in my mind was at an orchard, an apple orchard. They're picking all these apples. They put them in these wooden crates. Everybody has seen these. And then they put dozens and dozens of these crates on a horse-drawn wagon, and they weren't sure whether or not the horse could pull the wagon, so they'd have Elmer come over and pick up one corner of the wagon to see if he could lift it off the ground, and if he could, then it was okay for the horse. Have I said that correctly?
Yes, that is correct. That is how the story goes. Apparently, this apple grower spoke with Yankee Magazine, and I have not delved very deeply into the Yankee Magazine archives because I would like to see if there is any actual record of that. But yes, that is what he supposedly did. I provided a picture on the slide of a wagon freighted with some type of produce. It looks like it could be apples. But I try and reason with the students that, I don't know, if I was a farmer or an apple orchard grower, I would know what my horses could carry. I mean, I would think maybe the first time, but I don't think his services would be needed every time.
Exactly. The other story that is told, which I think is fascinating, and I would rather you tell it than me, is this one about the steam engine and getting it onto a platform. What was that story?
So Elmer's father owned a sawmill. And in those days, the sawmills were actually portable, and they would put them on these platforms that were on wagons, and they would haul them to wherever in the forest they were going to be cutting down the trees. They were setting up this very sizable steam boiler, and supposedly they needed to raise the boiler to hook it onto the wagon. And Elmer was very gracious and offered to help. Supposedly he put a flat board across his shoulders on the back and squatted beneath one end of the boiler and actually lifted it up onto the platform to be hauled away.
This is incredible when you stop to think about these things that he's purported to have done. And of course, then the press coverage just feeds into it. And he was actually compared to Samson and Hercules, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. He was. I'm not, you know, quite sure he was that strong, but but he was indeed compared to them, yes.
There's another story, just to go back to the food for a second, that you included in those slides that I'd love the audience to hear about. So he would take the horse and buggy down to get some crackers. Apparently had a pretty good appetite coming back. What can you tell us about that?
So the story goes that they hooked up the horse and buggy and headed into Norwich for groceries. While they were there, they purchased a 55-gallon barrel of crackers and then proceeded to snack on it all the way home. And by the time they reached the family farm, the story says the barrel was empty. Is it really possible to consume that larger quantity of crackers? Is it possible that the truth part of it is it was a 55-gallon barrel, but maybe they didn't eat all of them, but a significant amount of them? You know, we try and get into where is the line between truth and legend.
Now, as you said, he was contacted by weightlifters and strongmen from around, certainly North America, challenging him. He also, didn't he not, receive offers from circuses and museums to sort of be displayed, and he could have made a lot of money doing that as well. But he didn't actually take them up on it.
Yes, that is what I have heard. He was a very shy person, a very shy individual, and he was just kind of this gentle giant, and he was just interested in showing off his strength locally and being a good local guy.
Now, he never married, from what I understand, and there's one other, I think, characteristic of his that bears repeating here, which was, did he fight anybody?
The story, from what I understand, is he was such a gentle giant that he actually was challenged many times and refused to fight anybody because he didn't want to injure anybody. Now, he was very, very proud of his strength, but he never wanted to use it to harm anybody.
So now here you are teaching students about a local legend in your town of Voluntown, and you have to come at it with a healthy dose of skepticism, I'm sure. But what is the take for Karen Britz on Elmer Bitgood? Is this all fact or some modicum of truth to it?
I do believe that, as I said before, there is some truth in the tales. And I also think that there is a lot of embellishment in the tales. And it's up to us to kind of parse that out.
Newspapers were not 100% in Elmer Bitgood's camp. In fact, one notable article questioned whether the famous picture Karen Britt referred to, the one with the number 2,000 appearing under a large number of rocks, was accurately portraying the weight of those rocks in the picture. The writer pointed out that there was, frankly, no way to know for certain. Either way, there seems to be little question that this gentle giant from Voluntown was clearly a man of unbelievable, tremendous strength. We'll just never know for sure whether or not he was the strongest man alive in the world. Well, that wraps up this episode of Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path. You know, there's one other example from Karen Britt's student lesson plan that I want to share with you. It shows a picture of a 10-gallon milk container. Those are the types used for actually shipping milk. And then it says that Elmer supposedly drank 10 gallons of milk at lunchtime. Well, as she said, that's for each of us to parse out for ourselves. I want to thank our guest for today's program, Karen Britt, Vice President of the Voluntown Historical Society and a third grade teacher at the Voluntown Elementary School. The answer to this week's trivia question, well, the question was, the odd and scary noises coming from the earth in eastern Connecticut were said to have been caused by this mythical object. And what was that object? The answer is a carbuncle. Yeah, I didn't know what it was either. Well, it's part of the incredible legendary story involving the so-called Moodus noises, these mysterious noises that emanate from the ground in the village of Moodus in the town of East Hampton. Well, next week on Amazing Tales CT, we'll examine the history and the source of those noises. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is a production of True North Associates, LLC. This is Mike Allen. Be safe and please stay healthy.